Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of Afternoon Satsang. And as always, joining you from studios of Radio Sai in Prashant and Nilayam, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Arvind of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem, and this is that beautiful time of the year when the whole world is gathering at Prashant and Nilayam to celebrate Bhagwan's birthday. You know, celebrating Bhagwan's birthday is special because this was a time that would get us introspective, you know. Every time when Bhagwan used to deliver his discourses, he would say on his birthday, on many occasions he has said this, that you come and wish me happy birthday, I'm always happy. Go and give this wish to someone who is not happy. So whenever he says that, I always used to think, what is it that I must do to make the birthday special for Bhagwan? And I think that is a question that all of us should mull over in the inner recesses of our own beings as to what is it that will make Swami feel special on his birthday. Because after all, isn't a birthday a day when we make the person who is celebrating his or her birthday feel very special?
Very true. In fact, you know, you would be aware of that new thing we've started on Radio Sai, asking people to send in what they would like to offer to Swami on his birthday. And, you know, an overwhelming number of people have come and told us, have written to us saying that, Swami, I promise to be happy.
Wow.
You know, that was really nice to hear that, because we often think that, you know, we need to do things to be happy. But there are a lot of people who are saying that, Swami, I promise to be happy whatever comes my way. You know, that itself shows a good improvement in our understanding of what Swami wants from us.
Exactly, Prem. And if we decide to be happy, I think one of the best ways to incorporate that or put it into practice is via what we are doing now, that is Satyam Shivam Sundaram or the Sai Bhagavatam. Listening to the Lord's stories, enjoying it and reliving them, I mean, there can be nothing more magical and happiness bringing than these. There is something really mystical and magical about the Lord's stories. Listening to them over and over again, one doesn't get bored. In fact, every time you listen to the story, you get some new insight, some new consolation, some kind of solace, which seems so apt and perfect at that time. And I'm not speaking this direct, off the hat, the way they say it. Many times, you know, I have noticed when I narrate a story or an experience with the Lord, and there might be an audience of, say, 3 people or 30 people or 300 people, invariably, many come afterwards and say, you know, this is exactly what is happening in my life. It's so perfect for me. And when 3 people say that is exactly what's happening in their life and it's so perfect, that is when I realize that the same experience, the same story makes different sense to different people based on what is going on in their life. And therefore, one of the best ways to be happy always is to live in Sai always. And one of the best ways to live in Sai always is to live and relive his stories and glories.
A couple of weeks back, I was listening to that talk. I think I made a reference of that. We made a reference of that even last week, given by Mr. Ratnakar, the trustee of the Central Trust. You know, he says this, one of the most fascinating things about Swami is, you know, he would be there in the stadium, in the Hillview Stadium. He's been given a procession in a golden chariot. And there have been thousands and thousands of people, you know, are happy even to see a glimpse of his robe. You know, that speaks about the popularity of a person, you know, forget all the divine attributes and all that. And that's how much you're wanted by such a large number of people. And you've been treated like a king. And after a session like that, Swami would return back to his residence. And even as he is going into his house, he would call the guard who is at the gate and ask him, have you had your lunch? You know, that ability of Swami was what actually not only endeared all of us to him, but, you know, it made us feel a part of him and made him feel a part of us.
Exactly, Prem. If we go on this way, you know, we see that every moment of Swami's life has been so special. It is indeed, you know, a kind of foolish venture that we are here trying to relive all his stories. But I think our venture here is just to share and relive all that we have, you know, read or heard or seen. And We are doing this with the complete knowledge that this is just a drop in the mighty ocean. But how many ever drops we get, let us enjoy them. Just the day before yesterday, I was walking with Mr. Nagaraj. You know, we had interviewed him during one afternoon satsang. He shared
from
about
Anantapur.
Yes, how Swami had visited their home in the early 1940s.
Family of Mr. Chidambaraiya.
Exactly. Right. Yes. So, you know, we were just walking towards the archive, the temporary archive. For our listeners who might be unaware, a permanent archive building to store the greatest treasures that Swami has left us with, that is his teachings in the form of wonderful videos and audios and text letters. In order to store this treasure, an archive building is being constructed right next to the ad block on top of the Vidyagiri Hill. Till that building comes up in maybe a year's time, we have a temporary archive near the general stores area. Mm-hmm. Where we have stored all this. So therefore, you know, I was taking Mr. Nagaraj to show him our archives, to show him how bountiful Swami has been in his love, so that we have preserved all these videos and audios. And then I pointed to the hill, you know, where the construction for the archive building was going on, and I said, sir, you know, there, that is where the building is coming up. And that was enough to trigger off memories galore in him, you know. Mm-hmm. And he started reeling out one by one, so amazing, you know. Maybe I'll share one or two of them here.
Sure.
He said, you know, those days, there was nothing on top of the hill. It was full forested area. There was just a little general hospital. I think the hospital came in 1950s.
Right.
Yeah, so that was there. One day, Swami told Mr. Nagaraj and two of his friends, come, let's go for a walk.
Okay.
Where? Beyond the general hospital. So they climbed up the hill and to the place where currently the ad block is there, the Sanatan Samskriti Museum is there. At that time, there was nothing. So in the forested land amidst the trees, enjoying the breeze that was blowing Swami's lovely curls, they were just walking when Swami bent down and picked up a small pebble. He tossed the pebble high in the air and then caught it back in his hand. Then turning to Mr. Nagaraj, he said, tell me what's there in my hand now. Mr. Nagaraj said that he had no idea, so he told Swami, Swami, it is definitely not a stone, that much I know.
Okay.
Then Swami opened his hand, and in there was a sugar candy. And Swami broke it into three pieces and gave it to all the three of them. And Swami said, you know, this is what I have been doing and I will continue to do to hearts. Turn them from stone to sweet candy, you know. Mm-hmm. Turn stony hearts into sweet hearts. And then, you know, Swami immediately turned to one of Nagaraj's friends and told him, imagine if all the rocks in this Rayalaseema name itself means the land of rocks. Rayalu means rock.
Rocks.
Swami said, imagine what would happen if the whole Rayalaseema becomes sweet like this. And this thrilled Mr. Nagaraj and his friends, because just the previous evening, this very friend, it seems, had told him that imagine if Swami has such transformative power, he can change all these rocks into sweet. I mean, he had just made an offhand statement like that, and Swami was repeating that same to him. And then Mr. Nagaraj continued. Then Swami, you know, turned around and he pointed to an adjoining hill. And he said, you know, you can see that hill there? And down there, I will be standing there. Swami pointed to one end of the hill where it was, you know, one end of the hill. Mm-hmm. And then pointing to the opposite end of the hill, he said, and there you may be standing and watching me there. So Mr. Nagaraj said that at that time it made no sense at all. He was wondering, what is this? Maybe Swami is going to go for a picnic, or that was what he was thinking. But then he says that later on, if he sees today, the first place where Swami pointed is where Shanti Vedika stands. The other end that Swami pointed is where the primary school gate is. You know, and that is what literally happened when you were describing the birthday, when Swami would come in the chariot.
Right.
People had to stand more than 100, 200 meters away to have a glimpse of Swami. And this was what Swami revealed to him in the 1950s. And then Swami said, do you know, sage Bharadwaja has written, he has written that hukka bukka tatakamlo. Mm-hmm. Tatakam means the shore of a lake.
Okay.
So, you know, Bukkapatnam, we have a lake, and it's actually, it has been named Bukkapatnam after Hukka and Bukka, the rulers of the Vijayanagar Empire.
Bukkaraya and ha.
So, Swami told him, it seems that sage Bharadwaja had written, Hukka Bukka Tatakam lo,
mm-hmm.
Chitravati Tatam lo, mm-hmm. which means on the banks of river Chitravati. Tatam is for river, Tatakam is for lake.
Okay.
Puttaparthi Puram lo, Madhavadu, I forgot the Telugu word, which means Madhava will come or Lord Krishna will come. And Swami said, Swami just told this poem in Telugu to them. Immediately the other friend of Mr. Nagaraj, you know, imagine he asked Swami, Swami, who is Madhava then? Because he's saying, Swami, correct, the Hukka Bukka Tatakam, this, everything refers to this place. Now, who is this Madhava?
Okay.
And Swami looks at him, deep into his eyes, gives a smile and says, Madhava is your friend. And then Swami walks back. The other friend is just, you know, stunned, as is Mr. Nagaraj. So I asked Mr. Nagaraj, why did you get so stunned? Because he said that he is his friend. Mr. Nagaraj says that his friend was attracted to Swami. He wanted to come and see Swami. But he did not accept him totally as God. But he was just attracted to Swami. So he would come here, and whenever he comes here, his friends back in Anandpur and other places, they would ask him, where are you going? Where are you going now? And he didn't want to tell, you know, that there's one Swami, I'm going to meet, nothing. He would always tell, I'm going to meet one friend. He's one friend of mine. And, you know, that his, he has been telling to his friends, and he has never mentioned that in Swami's presence. But here was Swami, you know, giving the right answer, at the same time hitting another, bird with the same stone, revealing his omniscience when he said that the Madhava is your friend. Of course, referring to him as well as, you know. So, I was just thinking when he narrated it, you know, I made a statement saying we are building an archive building there, the temporary archive will shift there. And looking in the direction of my hand, he just remembered three incidents off the off the cuff and narrated it. I was just thinking how many such incidents with Swami would be buried in the hearts of how many devotees.
Definitely, but even as you were narrating that, you know, Swami revealing to his friend what the future would hold, mm-hmm. you know, for devotees, and the distance between Swami and his devotees physically. I remember when Mr. Nagaraj was here, we were talking to him, one statement which he said really struck me. He said, you know, one thing about Swami which really fascinates me is, I saw him in 1950s,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen him even in 2000 and later.
Mm-hmm.
Swami never changed. He said things around Swami changed, buildings around Swami changed, people around Swami changed, but Swami never changed. You know, I felt it was a very deep statement he was making, because, you know, your interaction with Swami has changed. Definitely he as a person would have seen so much change in his interaction to Swami. You know, the way you would go and speak to Swami. But a person of that nature who has seen the change over so many decades, to say that Swami remained the same, you know, Swami must have revealed what his true nature is, and I think that's what happens if you move with Swami.
It is Swami. Indeed a very deep and profound statement, because, you know, if you see Swami's message through and through, it has always been that you are all embodiments of God. You are all God. You know, and he always emphasizes that you're not a body with a soul, but you're a soul who has taken on the body. And if we look at our own lives, our own bodies or minds, with respect to this message that, you know, Nagaraj sir said that everything around changed but Swami did not change, that is what Swami tried to imbibe in us also. That, you know, when I say I am actually that soul within. That is changeless. Everything around that changes. The body changes, it grows old, so many things, it grows strong, then grows weak. The mind changes. Everything changes. But that remains changeless. And I feel through that statement, it is another way of presenting Swami's life as his message. Because his message has been that only. You are also that eternal changeless one around which everything seems to change. But you are changeless. And that is amplified by that statement.
You know, that's what happened. Another thing which I'm reminded is the brother of Mrs. Vijay Kumari, you know, Anita Shannam Nasti, author.
Mm-hmm.
He writes in his book that one day when he was in Mandir, he was in Prashantinilam, in the old Mandir, Puttaparthi, not Prashantinilam, two of Swami's erstwhile classmates came to meet him.
Okay.
You know, after many years, they didn't know that things had changed so much. They just thought that there was this very special boy who was a classmate and he was from Puttaparthi. So two of them just dropped in to just greet Swami. And they were surprised to see that there was an ashram here and people were,
you know, worshipping the classmate.
Worshipping him, and he was sitting on a throne. And they got a little, you know, awestruck by what they saw, and they said maybe they cannot go and speak to Swami like before. But when they went and spoke to Swami, and Swami started narrating all those incidents which happened in their school, then they felt the very same thing. He said, though he has not changed. He is still that same dear, you know, classmate of ours, a dear friend. You know, that was the thing, that Swami always remained a friend for everybody. It's just that physically things changed around him and around us, but he was always each one's best friend.
That's a very powerful message, because it holds good even today. You know, today when we think that Swami has taken Mahasamadhi, he's no longer physically there with us, just like his body underwent change, the circumstances surrounding around him change, I think we should consider this too as yet another change. Yes, it is another change in the circumstance, another change in the physical. But let us remember that that Swami who remained the same for 86 physical years continues to remain the same. And as we interview people, speak to people, get to know of their experiences, it is so much felt, it is so easily felt that Swami continues to be, continues to guide, continues to love, continues to shower as he used to do and continues to do.
Absolutely. And you know, the topic which we've going to be talking about today actually talks of this Swami who was, so much was changing around him, but he was remaining the same. Because, you know, imagine, I was just reflecting on that, 1944, 1943, Swami is just another high school student, you know, in Urukunda, in Kamalapuram, and within a few years, we're talking about 1948, 1949, just a couple of years, and Swami is moving around with royalty. Swami is living in palaces. Swami is flying already. Something which should have been, I mean, we spoke about what Puttaparthi was. A train was described as a monster.
Exactly.
You know, and here is Swami in 1948 and 49 already making air travel. And that is that interesting phase of Swami's life we are in, and we're going to talk about that, I think. But maybe before that, we'll just take a short break.
Exactly. And maybe we can just give a hint to our listeners so that they remain hooked on. The royal family that we are now going to talk is about the royal family from Chincholi that actually came to Swami in 1947. But then Swami even visited Chincholi in 1949. Some beautiful incidents, amazing stories, all of that coming up after this little break.
Rava Swami Sai Baba Ro Chutaku Mamuka Chutaku Rava Swami Sai Baba
Baba, go chutaku, namu
Yes, after that wonderful, beautiful song, I think it's time for the entry of another royal family. We spoke of the family of Sandoor, the royal family of Sandoor, and how Swami entered their life and entered their palace too. But now it's the turn of the Chincholi Rani. I think it's pretty much around the same time.
Yes, this was around 1946-47.
Yeah, I think most of these people came during that few months which Swami spent in Sakama's house in Bangalore. You know,
correct.
We spoke of how that was a something like a blemish in that glorious period of the old Mandir days where Swami was taken ill and Swami was spending some time in Sakama's house. But so many of these families which were to play an important role in Swami's life later, in the avataric mission later, seem to have come in contact with Swami during that period.
Exactly. Yesterday only, when I was speaking, I was thinking about the same thing. What we think as, you know, a kind of a setback or a downfall is also part of the master plan which is necessary. You know, in fact, Swami, we were speaking about how Swami has resurrected the image of the Queen Kaikeyi in the Ramayana. You know, we always considered Kaikeyi as the villainess who was responsible for banishing Rama into the forest. But when Swami revealed in his discourse that it was Rama who prayed to Kaikeyi, saying that, Mother, you love me the most, and because you love me, are you ready to sacrifice this? And what a sacrifice she had to do, sacrifice of her fair name. It was because Rama requested her to send him to the forest because he needed to go to the forest to achieve the mission that he had taken upon himself. So too, you know, when we think that Swami had taken ill, it is almost as if, you know, Swami requested the illness to come over him because he had to leave Puttaparthi and stay those months at Sakama's house where, as you rightly said, so many people from the royalty of those days met Swami and later on became important people in the avataric mission. So nothing about the avataric mission is a downfall, is a bad luck, or is something that happened without the Lord's knowledge. Everything has been planned to the last second.
Right. In one of the discourses that Swami gave during the 1990 Samukha, Swami makes this very point, you know, where he talks about the body and the senses. But towards the end, Swami makes this point that nothing that God has created is useless or meaningless. But it is up to you to find out what is the reason and to contemplate and discover it for yourself.
And he even gives the Chinnakatha after that of those dried leaves, I think.
Is it?
When there is a Chinnakatha which Swami says, I don't know the details, okay, but it's something like a guru tells his disciples that nothing is useless. When one of the disciples says that, you know, the leaves that fall from the tree, they're useless. I mean, nobody uses them. We just sweep them away. So then the guru says, get me a pile of leaves. Then, as I said, these are the details that I've forgotten. But he goes, and someplace when he takes, the ants tell him that, no, we need it for our winter food. Someplace else, the tree says that I need it for my manure. He comes back empty-handed and tells his guru that I couldn't get sufficient dry leaves because apparently it's very useful. So everything is useful, everything is necessary, everything is planned.
Yeah, like another Chinnakatha which Swami says is that a man once wonders, you know, how silly of God. He's made such a huge pumpkin and put it on a creeper which is so tender. And he's made such a huge and strong tree.
A banyan tree.
And he's made put such small, you know, fruits for that tree. And he's wondering, so when one day when he's sleeping under one of the banyan trees, he's woken up by one of those fruits falling on his head, the tiny fruits. And then he realizes, had it been a pumpkin which is growing on the tree,
he would have got brain hemorrhage. I mean, he will admire God's wisdom
right
when that happens. Let's not wait for pumpkin to fall on our head for us to realize the Lord's wisdom. Let us know with faith that everything is done in the Lord's wisdom. Now coming to the story, this is the story of Rani Lakshmibai and her husband, the Raja Bhimsen Rao of Chincholi. Chincholi is a small kingdom in the current Gulbarga district of Karnataka,
right,
in the northern Karnataka. It's almost on the border of Andhra Pradesh and very close to the state of Maharashtra.
Now we call it Karnataka, but then in early 1940s, it's pretty much a kingdom which was in the middle of what is now as two different states.
Correct. So it was something like part of Mysore. At the same time, it was very close to the Nizam's kingdom.
Right.
That existed in the 1940s. So now, how did Swami enter their lives? Now this Rani, that is Rani Lakshmibai of Chincholi, she had two sisters. that is Rajamma and Sitamma.
Right.
Of course, today they're known as Arani Rajamma and M.S. Sitamma. That is based on the families they got married into. But so Rajamma and Sitamma were the two sisters of the Rani. Now, these two sisters of the Rani, they had a friend, a common friend, who got to know about Swami and introduced them to Swami. But before that happened itself, you know, there was this Krishna Swami. Krishna Swami in the kingdom, he was a relative. He is actually the son of this Arani Rajamma.
Yes.
So, the queen's sister's son, he wanted to visit Shirdi because all the members of the Chincholi family were devotees of Shirdi Baba.
Even from the time of the king.
Yes. They were all deeply devoted to Shirdi Baba. And he wanted to visit Shirdi. But when he visited Shirdi in 1946, we all know that, you know, Baba had taken Mahasamadhi in 1918. So there was no chance for him to meet Baba. But then in Shirdi was a saint who was called Abdullah Baba. Now this Abdullah Baba dressed like Shirdi Baba. He looked like Shirdi Baba. He had the same kafni, same mannerisms. But he always spoke of himself as a devotee of Shirdi Baba.
Mm-hmm.
And he told Krishna Swami, that is the son of Rajamma, that you and your family will meet Shirdi Baba. Shirdi Baba will give you darshan within an year. And they were wondering, how is that ever going to happen? And that happened through the darshan they had of Sri Sathya Sai Baba.
Right. And again, going back to that Swami stay in Sakamma's house, that's how they first come and see Swami. As you mentioned, is another devotee who will feature very prominently in later years of Swami's life. That was Nagamani Purnaya.
Mm.
And she's also written a very famous book. I don't know the name of the book, but the author is very famous, Nagamani Purnaya. She happened to be the sister of the friend that you mentioned, of Arani Sitamma.
Yeah, Saku.
And
Saku
Rajamma
was the friend.
Yes.
Common friend. And her sister was Nagamani Purnaya.
Yes. And she had taken them to, I think they must have had their first darshan at Sakamma's house.
At Bull Temple Road.
At the Bull Temple Road.
Now these two sisters, that is Rajamma and Sitamma, their houses, actually, you know, though they were part of the royal family, they were not living in the Chincholi Palace. They had settled in Bangalore actually.
Okay.
So their houses were very close to Sakamma's house at Bull Temple Road.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where they had their first darshan of Swami, because as you said, Nagamani Purnaya's sister, Saku, was a very close friend of these two sisters. And she told them so much about Swami and persuaded them to have a darshan of Swami. And they had a darshan of Swami, and that is when they remembered that 1 year back, Abdul Baba had said that, and here is Swami being considered as an avatar of Shirdi Baba, a reincarnation of Shirdi Baba, so is there a connection? And the first time they met Swami, Swami told them, get the Rani too, that is Rani Lakshmibai. But Rani Lakshmibai had her own, you know, kind of fears and doubts, because she was a staunch follower of Shirdi Baba. And she was wondering, how can her Shirdi Baba be Sathya Sai Baba,
right,
be like this? It was the case of somebody not recognizing her God because of a different form that he chose to come in.
Typically how Hanuman refused to accept Krishna as the same Lord Rama, you know, because the characteristics are so different. But it takes a little bit of deep observing to realize that both of them are the same. But that's what happened, you know, when these two sisters came and visited, Swami told them, you bring your mother and your sister, the queen of Chincholi. But as you said, that she had her own reservations. And so the visit to Puttaparthi happened only with their mother. The Chincholi Rani did not come during that first visit. I think Krishna Swami also went.
Hmm.
The person who was told that you will meet Shirdi Baba in 1 year.
In 1948, right?
Yes.
Hmm.
And one of the interesting things she mentions in her narrative of how they first went to Puttaparthi is, she says, even then, the way Swami would speak to women, you know, Swami, the respect with which Swami would speak and the modesty which Swami would inspire them to maintain, that itself was a very idealistic thing about how Swami would interact.
Because in body, he was young at that time. I mean, he had early 20s he was in. He would never look into the eyes of the women when he would speak. He would always look down at the floor and speak. You know, doesn't it remind us of Lakshmana, that famous story that Swami says?
Right.
Of Rama and Lakshmana, you know. Sita has been kidnapped by Ravana. And Rama tells Lakshmana that, you know, I'm crying so much because I'm missing Sita and I'm so sad. So, here are some jewels that these monkeys, that is Sugriva and his monkey forces, they have gathered. They say that a woman was being carried away in the skies and she threw these jewels and ornaments down. Can you please take a look at them and tell me if they are my wives? Because, you know, Rama, Lakshmana and Sita were staying together in the forest for years. Lakshmana then tells Rama that, Rama, you know, I don't know. Naham janami keyure, naham janami kundale. Which means, I do not know the necklace, I do not know the earrings which Mother Sita wore. But one thing I definitely know, I know how her anklets look like. Because every morning I used to take namaskar from Mother Sita. His elder brother's wife, he used to bow down at her feet every morning. And he has never looked at Sita in the eye. And therefore he never knows what are the kind of jewels that she wears other than her anklets. That's why, you know, I mean, Ramayana is presented as an ideal for the way one should lead life. And here was Swami living up that same ideal. As you said, he would never look into the eyes of the ladies when he would speak. He would always look down at the floor and then speak to them.
Right. And actually, one other thing which happens is when they go, all said and done, you know, they're coming from a very well-off, exclusive family.
Mm-hmm.
Association with royalty, and they were hearing all kinds of stories about Puttaparthi, how it's very primitive and people live in the open space and they have to cook and eat together.
Mm.
So they were wondering, will they be given a room and, you know, place where they can cook their own food? But when they went, to their surprise, they found that Swami has already made arrangements and Swami had reserved a kitchen for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that the initial entry into Prashanti Nilayam or Puttaparthi old mandir was a bit smooth.
The transition from the transition, a royal
right.
kitchen to a small rural kitchen.
Right, staying there. But it just was a matter of time before they actually started enjoying living in Puttaparthi with all those difficulties and lack of comfort. And very, very soon they actually very willingly entered the fold of Swami and started believing that Swami is God. Because so much so that they came back that summer and they spent that entire summer vacation of 48 in Puttaparthi, right?
Exactly. And, you know, Swami became special in their lives. And when we listen to the narratives, we realize that they also became special for Swami. You know, Yamuna is the daughter of Rajamma. We spoke about Krishna Swami, who was Rajamma's son. Now, the daughter Yamuna, she was named Yamuna. Swami used to call her Godavari, because right. Godavari is the river that flows near Shirdi. So since she was devoted to Shirdi Baba, Swami would say she should be Godavari. Yamuna is more associated with Krishna, right?
Yeah, actually there were two sisters, Yamuna and Manjula.
Exactly.
Swami used to call one Godavari and the other Chitravati.
Wow. Oh, so that means Manjula was called Chitravati.
Yes.
It's so beautiful because, you know, this Yamuna narrates two incidents. One she says is about... They were staying near Sakama's house at Bull Temple Road. So whenever Swami would visit, would be at Sakama's house and he would sometimes go to Lal Bagh, different places. Sakama would take around Swami and tell him that I'll show you Bangalore. Lal Bagh is a beautiful place even today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge botanical garden. So on the way there, they had to pass by the homes of these two sisters. So Yamuna remembers that, you know, Swami would honk.
Mm-hmm.
He would honk the car near the house when he nears as an indication that, you know, I'm coming, and the people from these two households would come running out to the main gate and stand. Swami would come in the car, stop the car, open the door, get down, grant pad namaskar to them, then sit back in the car and leave.
Okay.
How beautiful. I mean, what a beautiful day it must have been. I was just imagining when, you know, if we just close our eyes and think that in the morning we open the door and Swami is there, we take namaskar and then begin the day. I think even today we can do that. Let us preserve a special corner in the house for Swami, a special corner in the heart for Swami. As soon as we get up in the morning, pray to Swami, and then, you know, let us in all our heart close our eyes and see Him inside. Because I feel that is the difference now. Before we had to open our eyes to see Swami. Now I think we have to close our eyes to see Swami. That's all. That is the difference. Close our eyes, see Him, take namaskar and start off the day. the day will go beautiful. And believe me, this I am saying from experience, that sometimes it feels eerily true, you know. Almost it feels, yeah, you almost touched Swami's feet. That is the power of the mind, and that's why Swami says, Manaiva Manishanam Karanam Bandha Mokshayo. So that is one incident that Yamuna reveals. The other, of course, is about her sister Manjula.
Right, and it's very interesting because this is a little girl, this Manjula, she's about 8 or 9 years old.
Whom Swami calls Chitravati.
Yes, Swami calls Chitravati, and she had a very beautiful relationship with Swami, because Swami would always pull her leg and have a very jovial chat with her. And she also was, you know, extremely free with Swami, the way she would behave. And it so happened that one time when Swami was going out to Chitravati, the tradition would be that somebody who was there would go and bring Swami's footwear and give it for Swami, you know, because those days Swami used to wear it and go to the sands. So when the elder sister Yamuna was bringing the sandals for Swami, this little girl comes running, snatches it from her and goes and puts it in front of Swami. And you know, apparently Swami pretended as if he was very pleased with her, pats her head and says, okay, what do you want? You know, as a giving her a boon for that little favor which she has done, Swami asks, what do you want? Do you want Shakti, Bhakti, Mukti or Bhukti? That's what Swami asks her in a very playful manner. And this little girl, to the surprise of everybody there, she says, Swami, give me Mukti.
This is a 9-year-old girl.
Yes. And she's saying, give me Mukti, give me liberation. And Swami draws her, and I've read this account in another book too, where, you know, the sister says that Swami draws her and says, Amma, do you know what you're asking for? Okay, you're too young for that, ask for something else. And this girl says, Swami, that you said you'll give me what I asked for, and now you're, you know, backtracking. He said, I want only Mukti, she says. And then Swami says, see, if you get Mukti, your mother and father will not be able to see you. Okay, and this girl says that it doesn't matter, you can show me to them anytime you want. Okay, and she was firm that I want Mukti. And then Swami said, okay, you will get it in 1 week. You know, that's what Swami says and goes away. And after that, I think their vacation gets over, they go back to Bangalore and the school resumes. And one fine day, this little girl gets up and she says, tells her mother that I'm having a headache, I don't want to go to school. And so the mother says that, you know, why are you being so silly, and you know, just for a headache you want to bunk school? They're just thinking that she's becoming a little fussy. And suddenly this little girl starts vomiting. And I think in a matter of 1 hour, she actually passes away.
Oh my God. Within just 1 hour, gone.
She's absolutely normal. And it was exactly after 1 week after Swami had told her that I'll give you Mukti.
Okay.
And I think it was sometime only the next month when Swami visited Bangalore, Swami had called for this little girl's mother to the devotee's house where he was staying, and he told her that I gave her Mukti because she had to get it.
So he called Rajamma and the two sisters, and he told them that, yeah, she asked for Mukti and I got it. When you narrated this, Prem, I got reminded of two things. The first was, you know, during the same period in the 1947 or 48, Karunamba Ramamurthy, she records that she got a few instances here and there to ask Swami spiritual questions. Because very often people would ask for, you know, material gains. Very rarely, this right now the example that you gave of Chitravati, what was her original name?
Manjula.
Manjula. Now I'm remembering her only as Chitravati. Then, yeah, very few rare cases like this who have asked for the highest. But so Karunamba Ramamurthy, she says that she got a few chances, and one of the questions she just asked Swami was, Swami, there are sometimes that children die young. They die as infants. What does that mean? And she has recorded Swami's answer, where Swami says that any child who dies under the age of 15 is a Karana Janma, born for a particular reason. Okay. Because till you attain the age of 15, you don't develop, you know, anger, lust and all these vices. You are innocent. So therefore, if the child passes away before that, and Swami also puts a caveat there. He says that the parents must be healthy. Right. There must be no genetic problem, he doesn't say genetic problem. He says the parents must be healthy, child passes away. He says in such cases, it only means that it had very little karma left, and therefore the child had to come, finish the karma and go. It's a Karana Janma. For such children, the parents should rejoice and not feel bad about. And in that viewed in that perspective, definitely Chitravati's or Manjula's birth was a Karana Janma indeed. This was one thing that struck me. And the other thing that struck me was an incident that was narrated to me by a devotee. He said that, you know, she would often hear a lady who used to sit in the first row, one of the VIPs, would keep pestering Swami, telling, you know, Swami, please give me mukti, Swami, give me mukti, Swami, give me mukti. This went on for a few days. One day during in the darshan lines, it seems Swami tells her, go for interview. And after the interview, that lady reveals that, you know, what happened in the interview was really embarrassing. Because Swami said, are you ready now? I'll give you mukti. And then she realized the import of what she was asking. I was reminded this because you said Swami told Manjula that, do you realize what you're asking?
Right.
The child had realized, but here in this case, the devotee had not. Swami said, okay, I'll give you now. Ready? Are you ready now? She suddenly said, Swami, I have not told my husband still. I have not told my children. Swami, not now, Swami. And she says then, that was how the interview ended, and she came out and she says, no, I'm so embarrassed. I have been pestering him for that, but when it actually came, I was not ready for it. So, it is not as if that you only ask. It's not about asking. It's about asking after being ready. That is how even Shirdi Baba differentiated between Prashna and Pariprashna. Prashna is just asking. Pariprashna is asking with great intensity, an intensity that builds up because of years of yearning and thinking and preparing for the answer. So, not only do we need to ask, we also need to prepare for what we are about to receive, and then only it meets fulfillment as it met in the case of Manjula.
Right, quite similar to that anecdote in Shirdi Baba's life, right, when a businessman comes and says, I want Brahmagnan.
Brahmagnan, yes.
And he comes in very, very neatly dressed and elite looking person. He comes and says, Baba, give me Brahmagnan. And Baba also pretends as though it's such a great thing. He's saying people come to me for health, for family and for, you know, progeny. But alas, one fellow has come come and asked me for Brahmagnan. So I'm very happy. And so this businessman is also all pumped up and he's saying, you know, how sad that nobody is there to ask like me. And then Shirdi Baba enacts a little drama. He says that I want 5 rupees. And he keeps asking Shama, he asks Mahalsapati, and all these are...
He also tells them, you go to the shopkeeper.
Yeah, go and ask the shopkeeper. The shopkeeper says, I don't have. He offers pranams instead of 5 rupees. And another shopkeeper, his shop is closed. And all this is happening. And every now and then this man says that, Baba, can you give me Brahmagnan?
And then go behind the fire.
Okay, and then he says, I'm waiting. And he also makes a statement that Tonga is waiting outside. You know, I have not yet kind of settled his...
Fair.
So if you can give me Brahmagnan, I'll go. And then Shirdi Baba says that, see, I've been asking for this 5 rupees for so long. You have so
60
many...
60 rupees.
Yeah, so, and Swami say, Baba says the denomination of the notes which he has in his pocket.
Yeah, I think it is 60 rupees, but
right,
okay.
Yeah, he says you have some 6, 10 rupee notes or something like that, Swami, Baba says, that is there in your pocket. It didn't occur to you that you can give me that 5 rupees. You don't even have this much vairagya, how can you get Brahmagnan?
In fact, the according to the Shirdi Ke Sai Baba movie, the actual statement that Swami says is that you need to give up attachment to the 5 elements, to the 5 senses, in order to get Brahmagnan. If you are not ready to give up your attachment to 5 rupees, how do you expect to get Brahmagnan? Really, absolutely true. What a beautiful incident. Dear listeners, the time in our studios is 1:26. You know, when we are discussing about Swami, his stories, the time seems to just fly so fast. We'll take a quick break. Please enjoy this song. After the break, we'll continue with some more beautiful stories of Chincholi. And be ready, the best stories are yet to come. And as always, we keep the desert for the last.
And we're going to play you a song which was recorded in our studio, especially for the dance program which was staged on 18th of November. And I think wonderful the presentation that was on the Navaveda Bhakti.
Superb.
Very beautiful.
And I feel that every person who has missed seeing it live should go back to our website, see the archived video, and definitely watch this presentation, which is worth watching at least twice.
And we're going to play for you one song which was part of that program.
Hare Govinda, 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 Hare Govinda.
Satyam Shivam Sundaram and the Rani of Chincholi. You know, it's very interesting whenever we are going through this 1944 onwards till the 1950, because the political backdrop of this entire story which we are going through is as fascinating as the story itself, because it was one of the most important and tumultuous period in Indian political scenario.
Mm.
You know, it was a time when India was becoming a nation, it was coming out of colonial rule. And there was that scare of it breaking up into smaller nations. Then very great leaders, you know, leaders whom we can look up to even today, you know, they set the standard for what leaders should be. And those people brought together this nation, and, you know, we are so grateful to them even today. And in fact, they were leaders who featured as ideals in Swami's discourses till the very end, even later when Swami would take classes for the MBA students.
He would talk about Mahatma Gandhi, Subhash Chandra Bose.
Lal Bal Pal and Sardar Vallabhai Patel.
Lal Bal Pal is actually not one name. It's Lal Bahadur Shastri, Bal Gangadhar Tilak and Bipin Chandra Pal. Subhash Chandra Bose, Mahatma Gandhi, Vallabhai
Patel.
So many names.
Right.
Rajendra Prasad.
And it was that time of the, you know, history of India where Hyderabad was central to a very, very, you know, stormy.
Till then, Hyderabad had been a very peaceful place because, you know, it was being ruled by the Nizam. The Nizam was a Muslim ruler and about 12% of the population in the place were Muslims. I think about 14% maybe. The rest, 86% were Hindus. So it was a Hindu majority place being ruled by a Muslim ruler, a perfect recipe for disaster. But that had not happened in Hyderabad because there's something magical in the soil of Bharat, as Max Muller says. There is dharma in the soil of Bharat. There is satya or truth in the air of Bharat. There is prema or love in the waters of Bharat. People may speak about the pollution of Ganga, Yamuna and all that. But that love that is there in the waters of Bharat cannot be denied. Please forgive this apparent detour here, Prem. But, you know, every time I feel that is probably one of the reasons why the Lord always chooses to be born in Bharat, because Bharat is such a divine land. It is a land that has always fostered and harmonized. It is a place where all religions of the world find existence, don't find suppression, don't find oppression. There are Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Parsis, Jains. I mean, recently I had been to a wedding in South Canara, on the South Canara district of Karnataka. Over there I visited the statue of Gommateshwara, as he is called, at Shravanabelagola. It is a monolith. It's about 45 to 50 feet in height of a Jain Tirthankar, Bahubali. It's so magnificent, and less than 300 kilometers away is this monastery at Bailkuppe near Mysore.
Okay.
It is possibly the biggest Buddhist monastery in the world, maybe.
Right.
There, when you enter, you see three huge golden statues of the Buddha. I mean, I don't know if it's actual gold, but it definitely looks gold. It's about 45 to 50 feet in size, and there are more than 300 to 400 monks over there, and most of them are from Tibet. And you see, you know, when China invaded Tibet, all those Tibetan monks found asylum in India, at Dharmashala, where the Dalai Lama stays. All religions. And the number of languages, I think possibly India is the only country in the world which has 18 officially recognized national languages. I mean, no other country will have so many. Such a kind of diversity exists, and yet democracy is flourishing in India. Yes, we have our problems, we have the corruption, we talk and we complain, we fight. But still, it is possibly the only successful democracy in the world.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, you should see that. I don't know, I'm sure you would have seen it, you know, the documentary by BBC, The Story of India.
Hmm.
You know, there they talk about this very thing, you know, the idea that this land has been ruled by so many different monarchs, you know, not just different people as kings, but different cultures have come and ruled this place. You know, you've had the Muslims rule here, you've had the colonial powers rule here, you've had the Portuguese, you've had the Dutch, and so
you've had the liberals, you've had the Orthodox.
Yes, and you've had so many things, but you can see that it has only enriched this culture.
Yes.
You know, they go to, especially they talk of Madurai. He's saying, can you imagine going into Athens and still having Athens as a city which worships that goddess who is central to that Athens, this one? You know, it seems like a mythological ideal picture, but that's what happens still in Madurai. He says that Madurai Meenakshi Temple is still the most important shrine in that city, and the same rituals and same traditions which were followed 2000 years ago are still being followed. The same chants. And that's what is special about India. You know, people have come and ruled, and new cultures have come in. They have never been able to invade the essence of India, and that's always been, has lived through and also has got enriched.
Again, I feel like reiterating what Max Muller said. He said that Max Muller, the saint scholar from Germany, said that there is dharma or righteousness in the very soil of Bharat. There is truth or satya in the very air of Bharat. And there is prema or love in the waters of Bharat. And this, I feel, is definitely a tribute to the large-heartedness and the broad-mindedness of the Bharatiya people. And that is why God also keeps coming here. I feel it is indeed a great blessing.
Right.
Great blessing from God.
The other day, Venkatraman sir was mentioning the Paramacharya of Kanchi. he would tell the devotees who come to him, he would say, don't call yourself Hindus. Call yourself a practicer, you know, practitioner of Sanatana Dharma.
Sanatana Dharma translates into the eternal way of life.
Right.
Sanatana meaning eternal and Dharma meaning way of life. That, you know, has been so degraded in colloquial use. Dharma is made to stand for religion and Sanatana Dharma is called the Hindu religion.
Exactly, because you know what happened in the ancient India was there was only one religion which was called Sanatana Dharma and everything else became a subset of this.
And it was also not like a religion. You know, because if it's a religion, tell me who founded Hinduism. Hinduism is a name that was given to all those who were not Christians, not Muslims, not Sikhs, not Buddhists who came later on. All these religions have a founder. The thing that we call Hinduism has no founder because this was the eternal way of life. The ancients used to lead their life in this manner and that's all it was. Offering their obeisance to the to nature, offering their obeisance to the animals, offering their obeisance to the plants. I mean, that was a way of life, that's all. It's not a religion.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, the broad-mindedness of this culture was what was the most important thing. Because you could be an atheist. You know, they would say, okay, that is a stage in life. You can be an atheist, but you will find it for yourself.
Yes.
You can be a worshipper of form. You're accepted, because that's also a stage in your journey. Or you could say that God is formless. Or you could say that God is inside. Or you could say that, you know, it's not a God, it's a goddess. You say anything, you know, it's just a way of life. It is one subset of this entire umbrella and you're accepted.
Beautiful. I mean, this digression came because we were speaking about the tough, troubled times in Hyderabad,
right,
which came about, you know, it is occasionally that there are a few communal elements that raise their head and bring about strife. And that's what happened. It is well documented in history as to how Kasim Razvi, a Muslim president of kind of, you know,
he started a kind of fundamental movement.
Yes, called the Razakars movement.
Razakars.
That movement was basically trying to keep the Nizam's kingdom safe. That's what they termed it. But it was actually they didn't want to become part of the Indian nation.
Right.
And he was inciting the Nizam to fight out and conquer the whole of India. In fact, he said that the waters of the Bay of Bengal wash your feet. Soon the flag of Hyderabad will flutter over Red Fort in Delhi and we will have conquered the whole Indian nation. And that is when a massacre started of the Hindus, where so many were killed because of these interests of trying to occupy and conquer the whole of the nation. That is when Sardar Vallabhai Patel, the Iron Man of India as he is called, who brought together all the states, he brought in the army and through a military operation, actually it was a police operation called Operation Polo, he put down this Razakar rebellion and Hyderabad became part of India in 1950, after which India became a republic.
And interestingly, another person who was instrumental in this whole process was K. Munshi, whom we've spoken about.
Kulapati Munshi?
Right.
Okay, yes.
You know, he was the arbitrator in this whole process where the Hyderabad accessed itself towards India. And we spoke of how he came to Swami much later in Bombay. You know, we're talking about the Razakars, you know, that movement as such. Again, it comes out of that fundamental nature of being intolerant to beliefs which are alien to you.
Mm.
Because these were people who felt that 84% of this land is Hinduism and we have to convert them to Islam so that the Nizam's rule will stay.
Mm.
That was the idea with which they went about.
That was a foolish idea because for almost more than 100 years before that, in the same kind of a majority Hindu population, all were happy and the Nizam was ruling.
And the Nizam at that time was the richest individual in the world, not in India, in the world.
Wow. Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. Okay. He was featured in Time magazine as the richest individual in the world and his wealth was supposed to be 2% of America's GDP then.
Oh.
You know, imagine they were saying that India is a poor country.
Hmm.
And here was one individual who was worth 2% of the US economy itself.
Wow.
You know, that's how rich he was and he was rich till he died in 1967.
Hmm.
And as you said, a person whose kingdom could flourish, why would you need to do something like this? Why would you need a movement such as the Razakars movement? You know, it only ended up destabilizing what would have been a good state.
And then, but you know, again, everything is part of the master plan. It was this Razakar movement that led to the Nizam's kingdom becoming a part of the Indian nation. And that's what happened. And the reason, dear listeners, we went about all this was because, you know, we were speaking about Rani Lakshmibai of Chincholi. The kingdom of Chincholi was the neighboring kingdom, a small kingdom neighboring the Nizam's dominion. Right. And the Rani was in her doubts, as we said, of accepting, before accepting Swami. That is when Swami himself came in a dream and told her that, I am Shirdi Sai, accept me, you know. That's so beautiful. We had discussed before how Swami does not impose. He shows himself as the personal deity or the beloved form of the devotee. And the devotee is able to see that form in Swami and therefore starts worshipping Swami. That's what he did to her. He said, I am Shirdi Baba. And when she described this form, she had never seen Swami till then. She had only heard about him. She described this form to her two sisters that we spoke about, Rajamma and Sitamma. And both of them said that this is exactly the form of Swami. Swami has come in your dream. So imagine, it was not some kind of psychology or some kind of imagination, because she had never seen Swami till then. But Swami came in a dream and told that he is Shirdi Baba. And slowly she got interested and began to, you know, visit Swami and feel that there is something special in Swami. And then happened this incident in 1948, when she was traveling in a vehicle because she wanted to go to...
I think by then she had already come and had darshan of Swami.
Exactly, at Bangalore.
In Bangalore, right.
At the same Sakamma's house.
Sakamma's house, and later in Bhaswarajur.
Basavaraj
Urs.
Aras, they call him Aras. Basavaraj Aras.
Yeah.
From the Mysore royal family.
Right. I think it was that time when, you know, you're one step in and one step out.
And she was, exactly, she was one step in and one step out. And the other step that was out also came in with this incident, because when she was traveling in the car, she was surrounded by these Razakars. And in those days, any non-Muslim would dread or shudder at the thought of being surrounded by the Razakars. They were armed forces with lathis, with swords, with guns, and they would just kill any non-Muslim. So her car was surrounded, and she was there in the car with her daughter, and she just did not know what to do. She had that, at that point, you know, that was the crunch moment, the moment where she thought she would put Swami to acid test. The wow moment that we spoke about last week. She picked up that invitation card from Swami, which had invited her to come over to Puttaparthi for Dasara in 1948. She picked up that card and put it on her daughter's head. I don't know, it seems so funny, right? I mean, picking up an invitation card and putting it on your daughter's head. But apparently that worked magic. The Razakar soldiers just let her go. Didn't harm a hair on any of their heads. The driver, along with the two women, not women, one woman and a child, they escaped, and gratitude in her heart welled up for Swami, because she was convinced beyond doubt that this was only Swami's working, Swami's hand. Otherwise, instead of a car of happy people, it would have been a burnt car with three dead bodies.
Yes, and this was that incident which really turned them through. And I think after this,
She visited Swami for Dasara
and Puttaparthi, and as we said, the rest of the family was visiting quite often. And I think during that time, towards the end of 1948, after Dasara, Swami on his own started telling that he's going to make a visit to Hyderabad. And he surprised everybody, because nobody had actually kind of invited Swami physically, though they all desired that Swami would come and stay with them.
Hyderabad to the homes of the Chincholi people, right?
Right. The Chincholi royalty had a palace in Hyderabad.
I don't think it was a palace, they were homes.
Okay, it's a house
in Hyderabad. And Swami said that he would visit them, and the house was called Shri Niketan.
Okay.
And this is what you were referring to, Prem. For the first time, Swami travelled by flight. He took a flight from Bangalore to Hyderabad.
Right, that was the first flight of Swami, and unimaginable in a sense. 1948, Swami has already taken a flight.
1943, Swami has not sat in anything else other than a bullock cart. And 1949, Swami is flying to visit royalty from Bangalore to Hyderabad.
1940, 1941, Swami is drinking water from buffalo troughs. And, you know, Swami is using thorns for
pins.
Pins. and Swami had only one pair of shirt and knicker. And by 1948, Swami is traveling by flight to a royal family, to visit a royal family.
And all this without asking. It has all just happened. And then, you know, Swami goes to Shriniketan. And at Shriniketan, it was a very, very, very interesting stay. Because, you know, Swami began to narrate things from his previous birth, which is Shirdi Baba. He tells the Rani of Chincholi that, you know, I have come here before. I have come and visited you before. Not here, not Hyderabad. I have visited you before. Now, she is absolutely certain that Swami has not come to Chincholi. So she says, no, Swami. Then he says, no, I had come. And he starts narrating, when I had come, I spoke this, I spoke that. I gave a discourse on this. And these are all exactly what Shirdi Baba had done when he had visited Chincholi. So she's shocked. And then Swami says, you know, I had this kamandalu. The kamandalu is a kind of pot right. in which water is kept. So I used to drink from that. I also had my robe. I have left it there at Chincholi. There is also a tanga, a horse-drawn carriage.
Right.
In which you used to welcome me and get me into... which you used to welcome me and get me into the palace. All these revelations really stunned her because some of the things she did not remember. In fact, she goes back to the kingdom in Chincholi, goes to the palace and conducts a thorough search and finds so many things that Swami said. The tanga she finds the kamandalu. How she finds the kamandalu is an interesting story which maybe you can narrate.
Right, and Swami also tells about you know, the modifications which have been made in the palace over the years. That's another thing which Swami mentions.
He tells that there was a neem tree yes. which has been fallen, a margosa right. tree.
And the queen goes back and finds all this mentioned by Swami, you know, to be true. Because some of it she herself has not witnessed.
Hmm.
And of course, before we come to that Kamandalu story, the interesting thing is, actually Shirdi Baba himself has never visited Hyderabad physically.
This was Chincholi, right?
Right, Chincholi. You know, Shirdi Baba has never visited that area physically.
Oh, okay.
But the king and the family have actually documented proof that Shirdi Baba has come and lived with them.
Exactly. If you see Shirdi Sai Satcharitra,
right.
there is no
visit of Shirdi Baba to any royal family, but he has actually been there. They have served him and, you know, it's not appearance. He has lived with them for a couple of days.
That is not surprising for us, Prem. We have got devotees who have documented Swami's presence in America, Swami's presence in Africa. Swami's presence in Europe.
Swami's presence in Uzbekistan.
Swami has never visited these places.
Right.
So, yes. Okay.
Yes. So, and the couple of things which were left was that kamandalu and that tonga. And one day when they were having some of the storerooms of that palace being cleaned, she found in a corner this particular kamandalu. And she takes it and she realizes that it's of the same specification that Swami mentioned, that he had used it when he had visited. So she gets it polished and she keeps it in her bedroom. And one fine day when she goes, she finds a cobra which is encircling that kamandalu. And so she immediately brings a camphor and offers aarti to that snake, you know, believing that there's some divine occurrence. So the snake goes away, so she takes the kamandalu and the next time she visits Swami, she goes and she says, Swami, that this is the kamandalu which... No, actually what happens is she brings that vessel and, you know, comes to Puttaparthi and Swami is sending word, saying that the Rani of Chincholi has brought my water
drinking vessel,
you know, fetch it from her.
One interesting point you forgot here, Prem, was when she sees the kamandalu, on that are inscribed the letters
Sa-Va.
Yeah,
actually she doesn't notice that.
Hmm.
When Swami asks for the kamandalu,
oh, okay.
That's when Swami draws her attention to those two letters.
Sa-Va for Sai Baba.
Sai Baba. And Swami says, see, my name is inscribed here.
In fact, you know, Swami always, as we say, strikes at least two birds with one stone, if not more. In the meanwhile here, the Dasara Yagnam has started, the Saptaha Jnana Yagna, and the priests have asked for a kamandalu, which is necessary for the rituals happening, and there is no kamandalu in sight in Puttaparthi, right. And Swami tells, don't worry, the Rani of Chincholi is getting it. And when it arrives, it is exactly the same specifications and the measurements that the priests need for the Yagnam. So they are thrilled, the Rani of Chincholi is thrilled, we are thrilled because we have a story to narrate, and the Lord is just smiling there.
Right. And I think much later she also finds that tonga which Swami referred to.
Yes, and dear listeners, do you know, there's something very interesting. That tonga which Shirdi Baba used without actually physically visiting Chincholi, means he has visited in his divine form, which all the members of the Chincholi royal family have seen. They have welcomed him in this tonga. Shirdi Baba has sat in this tonga, and this tonga was presented by the Chincholi family to the trust here. And today that tonga stands for all to see in the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum. You know, it's very interesting. In 2000, I think it was 2001 or 2002, when was that Shirdi Sai statue in the Vidyagiri Stadium inaugurated?
Oh, I think it was much later, after 2004.
Oh, 2004. Oh, yeah, 2004 or 2005.
2005, yeah.
So that year, Swami suddenly made mention of this tanga, and he told the trust members to get it. That's how the tanga was brought out, and Swami said, place it in Chaitanya Jyoti Museum.
Right. I think till then it was in the Sanatan Sanskriti
Museum. Yes. Right. So it was brought to the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum, and you know, I was speaking to Bose sir,
the curator of the museum.
And he was saying that it's not a coincidence that the tanga was given to the museum when right next door a statue of Shirdi Baba was being unveiled. And I remember I was there that day photographing. Swami pressed a button and the cloth dropped off the idol,
right,
revealing the beautiful statue. It is the smallest statue among all the statues, but it's a beautiful one nevertheless. So all our listeners can definitely make a visit to Chaitanya Jyoti Museum and have a look at this tanga. Now if you see, the tanga is covered with a kind of a leather canopy. Now Bose sir was saying that that canopy was not there. It had got eroded and degraded. It was gone. All that was there was a little handle which the passenger should hold on to and sit.
During the ride.
During the ride.
Okay.
So by matching the material of that handle and the color of that handle, they went to some old stores in Bangalore and fetched the correct canopy.
Okay.
And the canopy has been done later on, but if we look at it, if we look at the tanga, it looks as if it's not brand new. It's as old as it was. But the canopy is a new addition. The rest of the tanga is there for us to see and feel the thrill. That's a tanga that has been used by Shirdi Baba, blessed by Swami, and has been displayed at the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum.
Right. And just a small point about, you know, Swami's visit to Hyderabad. To see, if you note that, Swami himself said, I want to go to Hyderabad. And you know, September 1948 was the time when Hyderabad was taken over, and you know, where the Nizam signs that accord of accession to India. And it's been a wounded state, to say the least, you know, with all these revolution going on, the civil unrest, and you know, all that is happening.
They say that in the Razakar unrest, about 30,000 civilians lost their life.
Right. And you know, during that time when this new state was being formed, Swami found it fit to go and spend a few days there. And I'm sure it would have been something which is beyond our comprehension why Swami did that. And there definitely would be a purpose why Swami went there. Because towards the end of 1948, this happened. And in January 1949, Swami spent, I think, a good few weeks there.
He spent 3 weeks, almost till the 2nd of February, when he flew to Madras.
Right.
The second flight.
Second flight.
So from 9th of January till the 2nd of... Not 9th, from the middle of January till the 2nd of February, at least 2 weeks, he was in Hyderabad.
Right, 9th of January is right. From the 9th of January to the end of January, 2nd of February, Swami takes the flight.
So, and when he stayed in Hyderabad, they would rarely venture outside because the riots were on.
Still going on.
The Razakar violence was on. Because as you said, it happened in September, the accession.
Yeah, so, September of the previous year, but not all those people were still arrested.
Correct. And it ended with the arrest of Kasim Razvi.
Right.
His story is, again, it's not worth discussing here. But it was during Swami's stay at Hyderabad that another stalwart devotee paid a visit. And, you know, that was first acquaintance. That is Burugulu Ramakrishna Rao, who would later go on to become the Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh and Governor of Tamil Nadu and Uttar Pradesh. And, you know, when Swami visited these states, he was the governor and he played host to Swami.
Right, especially the historic Badri visit happened when he was the governor of Uttar Pradesh.
Yes.
And he was the person who, you know, went along with Swami, and a lot of beautiful incidents there, I think. Maybe
we'll come to that in Satyam Shiv Sundaram part
of 1960. I don't know when.
when we'll reach that. But you know, you see this thread running along, all along, where everything is so beautifully structured. It's almost as if Swami played a chess game. You know, from the moment he makes his opening move, he knows how he's thinking so many moves ahead. If we look at it from a human angle, human perspective, I'm telling. Of course, divinely everything is planned out. It is so beautiful.
Right, I mean, having said that, it's a very beautiful point that you said. And just contrasting it with what we spoke last time. You know, last week when we spoke, we said that not everything that Swami does is of such imminence as we can understand, because he is the God of small things. But he's side by side, he's also doing these master strokes and, you know, big steps, which
he revealed. God of huge things too.
Exactly. You know, here he was making political moves. He was telling kings and monarchs what to do with their kingdom. And he was also healing, you know, people who were being hurt by all these things which are happening in the political scenario of the country. At the same time, he was doing some small things, which, you know, you and I would wonder, why is Swami spending time doing such things?
You know, that is why the scriptures say, Anoraniyan Mahatomahiyan. Yeah. He's subtler than the subtlest, he's smaller than the smallest, larger than the largest. Well, before we conclude the Chincholi episode, because it's almost time, there's one more lovely miracle that Swami performed that happened just before Swami left for Madras, when Swami developed a big swelling in his neck. And the Rani of Chincholi was very worried as to what it was. Was it an infection? Should the doctors be called? But Swami refused everything. And in fact, during one discourse, he smiled and out came a lovely idol of Lord Krishna. And after that, when Swami pointed to the neck, the swelling was gone. So he just laughed playfully. And that Krishna idol continues to be worshipped in the Chincholi household. And that was another miracle that Swami performed before leaving to Madras on the 2nd of February. And that part of the story we'll take up in our Satyam Shyam Sundaram Satsang next week. Dear listeners, we hope that you are enjoying the Satyam Shyam Sundaram as much as we are enjoying it. For Prem and me, it has been sheer bliss, beautiful joy to relive the stories of our Lord. It is a learning curve forever and ever. And we hope that you too enjoy it as much as we are. We offer our gratitude at Swami's lotus feet for giving us this opportunity.
So dear listeners, we're going to leave you with wishes for Swami's birthday that's coming in a couple of days from now. The biggest festival for all of us, who have had Swami as the center of our lives. So as part, on behalf of all of us here, on behalf of Arvind and the rest of the Radio Sai team, I wish you all a happy birthday. So till we meet next week, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai and Arvind
from Team Radio Sai, offering our gratitude at Swami's lotus feet and signing off. After this song, on the other side, you will have Brother Chandu with his Love to Love segment.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Jaya Dunandan Param Niranjan,
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 Rama Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda,
Rama Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda.
రమణ శ్రీ రంగముకుంద
రమణ శ్రీ రంగముకుంద
రాధా రమణ శ్రీ రంగముకుంద.